Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Care, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. For Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
And here comes Calgary again. At center, they get it to Gaudreau on the left wing. Skates in, trying to feather a pass through a man. Unable to get it back to Lindholm. Look out, broken up by the Flyers. Couturier leads the charge the other way. He's up the right wing. He's got a man with him. Couturier shoots, rebound. They score! Atkinson puts it in for the overtime winner. His seventh goal of the year, and Cam Atkinson gives the Flyers the 2-1 victory.
And Philadelphia, which has very little to celebrate, will have a parade because of that goal. It's great.
Yeah, they're off to a good start.
Yeah, actually they are. They're off to a really good start. Credit to where credit's due. I mean, they're playing well right now. They're playing better than the Pens are. No question about that. They're playing very, very well. We have Ross Tucker in a few moments. He's going to be maybe just a couple minutes late. By the way, the number one rated game, I mean, for whatever it's worth, Penn State-Michigan was the number one rated game Saturday in terms of TV ratings, for whatever it's worth. And again, the Big Ten, they've got their TV contracts coming up. Now, I've said this once, I've said it 100 times. His number one job is to get a new TV deal that works for everybody. Right? And they've got to make decisions in this conference. With all due respect, they're going to make decisions in this conference that point Penn State and all the schools in the direction of championships and not only always just money. Whether it's scheduling, whatever, or whether it's scheduling, how divisions are set up, whatever it may be. Because you'd be amazed that you'll end up actually getting more money if you do. It's amazing. So we'll see what he does with it. You know, that's his job. That is his job. Let's see. Carlos Correa, Derek Jeter didn't deserve any of his gold gloves. No reaction from you? I mean, he's ripping your guy here. He's ripping your guy. Carlos Correa, Derek Jeter didn't deserve any of his gold gloves. And there's no reaction from you. Just when Jeter needs you, you aren't there.
That's all right. I think the 5 championships and his numerous other accolades speak for itself.
I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, you want straight? Jeter was a good defensive shortstop, not a great one.
I'll give you that.
You want to know why I say that? It's amazing how the Yankee infield across the board committed so many errors until they got Tino Martinez. Then when Martinez left, the Yankee infield committed a lot of errors until they got Mark Teixeira. First baseman cleans up a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. Doesn't take away from a Hall of Fame career, but let's not pretend he was Ozzie Smith either. All right. Here's one of my favorite people. Now, I'm watching a game on CBS Sportsnet a couple weeks ago, and like, Ross Tucker, now I'm going to be able to learn more about a game. Ross, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me, man. You know I'm a big fan of yours and love getting a chance to listen to your broadcast every time I can. Except you guys are playing at noon too much. I call a noon game for CBS Sports Network almost every Saturday, so I preferred it when you guys did 3:30s. Or even a couple times I've caught you at night, like the Ohio State game, driving back from Buffalo. Too many noon games for me this year, Steve.
Yeah, a lot of them. So they got one this week, and then next week will be Michigan State at either 3:30 or 4. I want to ask you about the college football playoff for a moment. Georgia plays Charleston Southern. That doesn't sit right with me because you know they're ranking at that time. Alabama plays New Mexico State. That doesn't sit right with me because you choose to play these teams when the playoff committee is ranking. And the playoff committee blows it off every year. I think they should send a message. What do you think?
Send a message in what way?
Drop them to 5 and 6 respectively this week, and then after this weekend when they play somebody legit, then you can move them back to 1 and 2. But at least for a week, send the message, hey, look, don't schedule like that when we're ranking.
That's interesting. It doesn't really bother me. The SEC always has this week before the rivalry games or whatever where they play an FCS team. That part of it doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the inconsistency regarding what the committee's looking for. You know, the Oregon win over Ohio State, that head-to-head matters. But
yep.
The Michigan State win over
Spot
Michigan,
on.
That head-to-head doesn't matter. So that's the problem I have. And then I don't know how you feel, Steve, but the Cincinnati thing really bothers me. I mean, everybody agrees that Georgia's the best team. Well, I watched Cincinnati play them in the bowl game last year, and I thought Cincinnati was the better team. I thought Cincinnati should have won the game. They kind of blew it at the end, but they were the better team. Oh, well, Georgia, you know, Georgia didn't care as much. I can't stand that SEC logic. You don't get to say every bowl game other than the college football playoff if you're an SEC team. You don't care as much. And by the way, if they had one or two guys that didn't play because they're going to the NFL, those are the guys playing this year. That's this year's team. This year's Georgia team played in the Sugar Bowl, whatever it was, against Cincinnati last year, and Cincinnati was the better team. And oh, by the way, how many teams, Steve, have a better win than Cincinnati does this year? They won by double digits at top 10 Notre Dame. They won by 2 scores at top 10 Notre Dame. Maybe Oregon's win at Ohio State. That's about it. So Cincinnati's undefeated. We see them. They're a good team. The quarterback's a pro. The corner's a top 3-round pick. The DN's a top 3. Like, they've got pros on their team. They're a good team.
Well, let me add one more in on Cincinnati. The game was in Atlanta. Okay? It's a home game. And let's be honest about it. Cincinnati in some ways lost that game because you're right. They were better. I know Georgia had a tough opener with Clemson, but Cincinnati's played them better than any other team the last 11 games.
I would love to hear what people would be saying right now if Cincinnati had won that game. I think it would affect how they view Cincinnati a little bit. It's just a shame. I mean, it really is. Like, how they're not in the top 4 right now is beyond me.
And that's they're sitting at 5 right now. Now maybe if the Alabama Georgia thing will be interesting, Ross. Say Alabama negotiates the last 2, Arkansas and Auburn, and they play Georgia, and Georgia wins. Do they keep Cincinnati out and keep Alabama in as a 2-loss team? When that happens, I think you're going to see all heck break loose.
Well, so here's the thing. Alabama's going to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. If that happens, I really believe it. I think Georgia's the better team, and I think Georgia would get them again in the national championship game. But I've been to the SEC championship game a couple times. It's just, it's hard to go undefeated. It's hard to go the whole year without losing. Alabama's really good, and I would imagine that there's a decent chance Georgia loses that game. Now, if Georgia wins that game, and they still try to put Alabama into the college football playoff when there's undefeated Cincinnati, then we have a major, major problem. But I also, I'm not convinced Ohio State is going to be able to go unscathed against Michigan State, Michigan, and in the Big Ten championship game against which looks like Wisconsin now, which is amazing when you think about that.
Yeah.
That Wisconsin's battled all the way back. You know, that win for Penn State, I guess, is looking, it looked good at first, then it looked not that great for a while, and now it's looking good again.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've got to ask you, you and I and Eagle did the Dolphins game with the Ravens, right? And the Robert Hunt play. So I mean, your call on it was phenomenal. What was it like watching it in real time?
Well, so you'll appreciate this, Steve. My initial thought, well, first of all, seeing him catch it and make a move and dive in, I was laughing. But then I had to look at the monitor right away because there was a small part of me that maybe thought I missed something and that they had Hunt as a goal line tight end on the play. They were at like the 12-yard line, though, so that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But I thought, because he did it so naturally. I mean, like, Steve, he looked back for the ball like the play was designed for him. Then he caught it, and he followed the blocking in front of him. I mean, meanwhile, all the while, he knows it's illegal. Then he dives into the end zone. Like, I have no idea what he was doing, but it's absolutely, every aspect of it is hilarious. And think about, by the way, how agile he looked at 6'6", 327 to be able to look like that with the ball in his hands in open space. I mean, that's one of my favorite plays ever. But my immediate reaction was, where did he line up? And then when I saw the replay on the in the booth on the monitor, I thought, oh, he was a guard. I'm like, he can't catch the ball. He lined up at right guard.
Yeah. But it was still, I mean, In the NFL, which can be the no fun league at times, that was fun.
Oh, it was awesome, and that was actually a pretty terrible game. So that kind of got the game going then a little bit. Then the Ravens did a little something, and between Brissett getting hurt and Tua having to come off the bench, and then Hunt, and then the Ravens trying to make a game of it, we got some excitement later in the game. Strange game.
I got to ask you about, I know you follow Penn State very closely. Obviously, it's been a frustrating 6-4. What's been your thought when you've had a chance to at least look at it some?
Yeah, you know, very disappointing because when they got off to such a good start, there was just such excitement. I mean, you know, I live in Harrisburg, and all my family and friends are diehard Penn State fans, so it was just a very encouraging start to win those games against, you know, what have turned out to be pretty good Wisconsin and Auburn teams. I think the one thing that jumps out to me for sure is just how hard Penn State's schedule was this year.
Yeah.
But the thing that bothers me the most that's unfortunate is that if Clifford doesn't get hurt against Iowa, they win that game going away. They beat Illinois. And so then that Ohio State game, you know, I'm at the age now, Steve, and you probably are as well. I'd love to see Penn State do well. I'd love to see them win the whole thing and whatever, but and go to the college football playoff. But what I really like when they play in big games. I really like when the excitement is ratcheted up and, you know, all eyes are on them. And, you know, the Illinois and the Iowa games are the ones that bother me the most, just because, you know, that Ohio State game would have been epic then, even more so than it was. And then after that, you know, then they have the Michigan game. They still would have only been a one-loss team and very much in the mix. So that's probably the part that bothers me the most. But injuries happen, and they did not have a very good solution for it. You know, they fell apart after he got hurt against Iowa, and then certainly against Illinois. They didn't stop him on defense, and Clifford was clearly pretty banged up still. So it's been very unfortunate because it feels like they have more talent than a 6-4 team.
You're always great to talk to, Ross. Thanks a lot for your time, my friend. Appreciate you very much.
Absolutely. Take care, Steve.
Ross Tucker joining us. Back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
I think right now we just don't have the explosive plays in the running game. That's you know, been our challenge and our issue. I think we've been running the ball a little bit better the last couple weeks, but there's been some opportunities for some big plays that we've made in the past and we need to make moving forward. So that'll be a focus all week long. That'll be a focus this week against Rutgers that does a really good job of defending the run.
And that's going to be one of the they have to get the running backs have to get themselves to the third level. Too often there have been stops at the first level. Then if they get to the second level, there's a stop. It's when you get to the third level that you're able to get the big play. You know, Sean Clifford had an early long run as a quarterback. Kevon Lee had that 44-yard run early in the season. But that's been it. I mean, there's not been that. There's been the ability at times to break off 10-12. You know, and that's happened a few times. But more often than not, it has not. And that's been a big part of no explosive chunk plays in the running game, or relatively few. How about that? And you know, you can do so much with play action pass. It can help your offensive line out, for example, because you go play action and you've held some people maybe for a count, especially if they're trying to blitz. Boom, they're trying to blitz, like, and you go play action, it'll take them aback for a moment. I mean, that's where you're missing out. And a lot of it rolls from one to the next. And I like Bill's comments about the tight ends. Bill from York, I thought he was spot on. Did a great job with that. All right. Great to have you with us. I've received the invitation. I didn't know Christmas was spelled with a K. Do you worry as much as I do?
Oh, my almighty!
I personally think it's scary, don't you? I mean, look at it. It's like Christmas party. Like, K? What?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
Now, if Ricky Ricardo invites us to the holiday party, we're in.
I mean, of course.
Go. Oh, you'd go.
In
Absolutely.
A heartbeat.
Yeah, and he thinks Jeter was a good defensive shortstop. I'm just going to, I mean, again, Mertzy goes, I'm going. You okay?
Yeah, I'll have to check on that. I'm not sure.
Yeah? Hadn't been the best week for her, I know. But,
yeah.
You know. But when everything settles down, just find out. Okay, great to have you with us on the show today. Practice today. And then they will go with the usual Thursday practice. Now, next week when they go, Thursday practice is going to be in the morning. Because next Thursday is Thanksgiving. They will practice in the morning, and then a big part of what he's been talking to them about for next week is, I want to make sure each one of you has a place to go, whether it's to a friend's house, whether it's to an assistant coach's house, whether it's to his house. He's very good. You know, now, they're going to have a Thanksgiving meal after practice. But he's talking about after that. Does everybody next Thursday have a place to go for Thanksgiving. So, you know, they're already talking about that. Because you have to. You have to plan ahead on something like that. Also, James wants to know ahead of time who's actually coming to his house. That way they can have an accurate count as to how many meals to have there. All right. Great to have you with us on the show today. Penn State defense is going to need to be ready for a running quarterback, Noah Bedrill, who, by the way, is on his third team. He might be the best running quarterback in the conference.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. A lot going on. Not only just going on in football, but on the pitch. And that would be Penn State men's soccer. The men's soccer team at Penn State not only won the Big Ten regular season championship, they beat Indiana for the tournament championship, and they get a first-round bye in the NCAAs. They'll play either Hofstra or Lipscomb coming up on Sunday at 5 at Jeffrey Field. The Big Ten Coach of the Year, Penn State's Jeff Cook.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and we're excited that we're still playing at this time of the year. So looking forward to being with you.
No question about that. So along the way, elements have to fall into place. You knew you had a good team coming in, but what were a couple of elements that fell into place that took a very good team and turned it into this kind of team?
I've been thinking a lot about this because we had a good run, as you remember, early part of October. I think we had won three straight games, finishing up with a win over Michigan at home. And then we hit a bit of a road bump. You know, we lost three straight 1-0 games to very good opponents, but we had some work to do. And I think there's almost like this collective will of the team, Steve. In that Maryland game, we're 2-0 down. It's a Tuesday night on BTN, and we just had this kind of switch that went off. Like, no, we're not going to accept this. We're going to fight back, and we got back in that game and ultimately won it in overtime. And I credit that determination from our team and the ability for this group to score goals, which has been a pleasant weapon that we've had down the stretch.
Yeah, because I had a chance on Sunday night. I was in the airport, and the Indiana soccer team was there. So I had a chance to talk to a couple of their players. They are, like, impressed beyond words with some of the talent you have on there, and they immediately started talking about Pierre Reedy, and immediately they started talking about Brandon Hackenberg. What have veterans like that meant as leaders for you as an extension of the coaching staff?
Both those guys you mentioned have been exceptional, and I think, Steve, I connected to the sort of roller coaster of the season that we experienced. You know, we lost some games early, we rallied, we hit a bump, and for an inexperienced team or a youngish team that haven't endured the rigors of a collegiate season, it's easy to kind of let those things spiral out of control, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the calmness and experience that Brandon and Pierre have was vital. And, you know, it's important to note, no shortage of soccer talent there too.
Yeah.
That kind of helps you, you know, go through those moments and realize that, you know, one of the things we talked about, Steve, is that the story of the season is not written in early October, right? It's not written after the Big Ten tournament. Let's see, you know, we'll sit around at the holidays and think about what the story of our season was, but let's not jump to conclusions. And they've been instrumental in helping me keep the momentum going through the ups and downs that we've experienced.
As you know, James Franklin always talks about the 1-0. This is the ultimate 1-0 time of the year.
It is, yeah.
It's the ultimate. So because this is the third year in, does that help, especially with veterans who have been there, in the approach that is needed?
I think so. And it's the pattern of the timing and the practice opportunities is the exact same as it was following the Wisconsin final regular season game.
Right.
We've got a week, you know, so we've done our recovery. We're now getting ready to practice this afternoon, building into the next Sunday game. And I think what I reflect on is that we've had some great highs with this group over the last few years, you know. Nothing more remarkable than what happened at Jeffrey Field last Sunday. But last year, you know, getting to the Sweet 16, winning a first-round NCAA game. But then you also experience the famous Wide World of Sports agony of defeat.
Yeah.
And so this group very much knows what it's like to go out of a Big Ten final on penalty kicks, what it's like to get knocked out in a very close 3-2 game. So I think there's almost that hunger, and that's, I believe, fueling us to know, okay, stay calm, stay true to what you're doing, and know that every second in a game at this level counts. And again, you know, it's easy for me to say that as a coach, but if you don't have the players who've experienced that in real time, in real life, it's not as powerful.
I think, Jeff, for fans, they completely understand, you know, the agony of defeat and how you got to bounce back from that.
Sure.
I'm not so sure sometimes they understand that you actually have to handle success as well.
Yeah, true.
And what has it meant that it seems like you have a team that has been able not only to fight through a tough time, but also have had the ability to understand the even keel that is needed when success does happen?
You're right, and I think both sides of it, you can overreact to results, right?
Yes.
Especially in our sport.
Yes.
Sometimes the result, to use a famous phrase, can be an imposter. You can play the best game of your year and give up an unfortunate goal, or maybe your goal scoring, you know, isn't on point that day, so you wind up dropping a result. And then you can also do the opposite. You can maybe not have your best game and somehow sneak a victory in our sport, maybe as much as any other sport that's out there. So being able, what we've tried to do consistently through the year as a coaching staff, Steve, is evaluate the performance and very quickly get everyone's feet on the ground. And we gave the guys some space Sunday night, Monday, to enjoy the celebrations and the accolades that they've earned.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know that when we get to Sunday and the kickoff comes, whether it's Hofstra or whether it's Lipscomb, those two teams are going to be formidable. They're going to be highly motivated to play against Penn State.
That's right.
They'll be every bit as eager to advance. So I think our players respect that. And we've stayed very consistent with our messaging about how we're approaching each game and that kind of 1-0 mentality. We've got to do it all over again Sunday.
Is there any difference in even a slight style of play when it's been 70 degrees early in the season to being in the upper 30s on Sunday? Is there any difference? Because your sport is a dramatic one in terms of weather conditions, and this is one of the dramatic times.
Of course. And two things there are, number one, wind really impacts soccer games.
Oof. Yes,
in a big way.
Yep.
And then I hesitate even to say this, but when you get really into the Central Pennsylvania winters, you start talking about frozen fields, and that's when you get really nervous about the ability to play. That's a concern. As you know, Jeffrey Field, our crew, George Peters, Herb Combs, and all their incredible group do a super job keeping that facility in the best possible condition. So I don't have a short-term concern on that, but those are the two things that really worry. I mean, I think our guys embrace the cold weather, but it is definitely a change of environment you have to handle as professionally and maturely as you can.
What does it mean, especially at this time of the year, to get to and then play with the lead?
A really interesting question. I thought that in the three Big Ten tournament games, we handled playing with lead against Indiana the best. I felt that against Michigan and Michigan State, to an extent, we played a bit of a dangerous game holding on to what we had.
Right.
And that was not intentional, and we spoke about it with the team. I don't think even our players wanted to do that, but it's a human reaction, isn't it? You're in front. Okay, we've got something here. Let's hold on to it. And that can come back to bite you if you don't stay on the front foot and stay aggressive. And I thought we were, to be honest, with the lead, we were improved against Indiana, and obviously the goals helped reinforce that, right, in our sport. We scored some good ones to sort of put the game out of reach, at least in that particular 90 minutes. But I think those lessons are important, and hopefully we'll be back in front this Sunday at Jeffrey.
Because sometimes when the team gets to the lead, now they're playing like they have something, you know, to lose. Like, I've got the lead, I can't lose it. And
you know, no question.
And I've seen that happen over and over again in the 5.2 billion games I've done. So. Finally, the depth of your sport, I feel collegiate, my opinion, you know, is, I don't think it's ever been deeper. What does that tell everybody about the success you've attained to this point, and obviously looking for more down the road, that you've been able to do this with this program when the sport's been its deepest?
There's no question the sport is growing, and I think this year with so many teams welcoming back very experienced players due to the extended COVID eligibility,
right,
I think it's a testament to our players' commitment to improve. And I don't think as a Penn State coach of all sports, all genders, that I'm alone in that mission. I think our teams, I'm part of a group of coaches, I think, that really embrace that player development, get better week in and week out, regardless if you're winning. And I always, you know, think to my immediate surroundings here in Rec Hall, and the mentality is, okay, you've had, you know, fill in the blank, incredible achievement.
Yeah.
You know what? Next week, we're going back to work. We're going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, and you can, you know, I think you know what I'm talking about with some of my colleagues here.
Yes.
That, I think, is very fundamental to who we are as an athletic program. That, you know, achievements are great. We've created some great memories this season, but we're so desperate to create more and stay hungry. And that's the only way to do that is get better, get fitter, handle, you know, all these moments we're talking about. And it's always a joy to speak about this kind of stuff with you. It's, the understanding of sports and success in sports is very fragile. So we've got to recognize we've given ourselves a great opportunity, so let's not waste it.
Yeah. Well said. 5 o'clock on Sunday. Best of luck in step one.
Thank you very much. We're excited to get out there and play again. Really appreciate you having me on.
Jeff Cook, Penn State men's soccer coach. Matt said, you need to talk football. We just did. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, so great to have you with us as we close out the show today. Thanks to Chris Mack for being on the show, Ross Tucker, Jeff Cook. Appreciate that very much. A lot going on. And it's that time of the year, there's a lot going on. Now, tomorrow, I was kidding James Franklin today because James, when he goes to the coach's show, he goes from practice over, he gets a police escort to get him from practice over to the field where we do the show. And and so I said to him, I said, hey, by the way, I said, can I borrow your police escort tomorrow? He goes, yeah, sure. He said, what do you need it for? So I got to go from the field over to the Jordan Center to then start the basketball game. He goes, oh, he says, yeah, go ahead. I said, yeah. I said, it'll be a first for me. He said, well, how's that? I said, normally for me, the police escort, this will be the first time it's been in front of me instead of in back of me. So.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
but it wouldn't hurt me to have it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's going to be tight pickings for you.
Well, this is no, but we worked this out weeks ago because it came up as to what to do. So they wanted to know. God, the suit even spelled SBC wrong. All right, that's
oh,
awful.
By your Biden.
It scares the daylights out of me. I don't know about you. But we worked it out weeks ago because we were like, okay, how do we handle this? And so I said, well, this is how I think we should handle it. And they did it the way I hoped they would. I said, I should do the entire show with James, only in part because I also have to do the pregame show with him, too. So I taped that afterwards. I said, why don't we get Joe Putnam to open the game since he's engineering it, so he's already there. I said, so he can then move from play-by-play to what he was supposed to do anyway as the engineer. And then I'll step in at the under 16 and take the game the rest of the way. So I was kidding Joe. I said, in a baseball sense, I said, we're like the Tampa Bay Rays. You're the opener.
Perfect.
So that's how we're going to do it. I mean, we debated whether we would have somebody come in and do the final 15 minutes with James on the show or not. But, you know, for example, Brian Tripp is going to Minnesota. He is not available this weekend. He's going to be doing Minnesota and St. Thomas hockey against Penn State. It's four games out there. So he's leaving. And so he won't do sidelines this weekend either. So we're kind of looking around saying, okay, how do we handle it? And I said, I think that's how we'll handle it. I think it's more comfortable that I'm with James until the top of the hour. I'll then tape the pregame show. That way, I'm not going in at 6:30 in the morning on Friday to do it with him in the office. Joe can open. He's going to engineer anyway, and then I'll take it from there.
There you go. Sounds like a plan to me.
I mean, the backup plan involved the suit, and then legal got involved. All right. So this is a different story.
No good! No good! No good!
Now, did you see the Dennis Dodd story on Steve Sarkisian?
No. What did he do this time?
Well, it's not anything he did off the field. Dennis Dodd thinks that Steve Sarkisian's going to get fired. He's been there a year.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I just think it's a remarkable story that if that were to happen, wow.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss has had a pretty good year, and they've been good offensively.
This is Steve Sarkisian at Texas.
Oh.
And Texas has had one blown lead after another.
While that's true, I'm still, firing somebody after 1 year is just not, that's not ideal.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, it's crazy out there right now. Crazy.
Not only that, I'm pretty sure that's not how to survive once you become a member of the SEC. That's just my opinion.
Okay. He said it straight out. He said he thinks the fire inevitable. All right. So this is what he wrote. He says, just a few months ago, Sark was the guy. His hire made total sense. It might still, if Sarkisian survives this and goes on to win big at Texas. He was the best name left in the board, probably came highly recommended by Nick Saban. The two share the same high-powered agent, Jimmy Sexton. But first, Sark has to turn around a locker room that looks like it has quit on him. Until then, the process is a template for a school, how it paints itself into a corner. Texas so desperate to find and overpay for a competent coach, it has to shell out $21 million in buyout money to admit its mistake. Even that might be too much for those considering Tom Herman is living comfortably off his $15 million buyout. But sooner or later, they have to look in the mirror. They're the ones who swung and missed on Saban. He says they're the ones who pulled the trigger on Herman when it looked like he was, you know, starting to win. Worse, Ryan Day, Dabo Swinney, and Jimbo Fisher aren't walking through the door right now, and Texas isn't even near the door. Dodd thinks many Texas fans, Dodd, like many fans, thinks Texas should already move on unless the program wants to be an even bigger laughingstock in the college football realm. Again, you know how I felt about the Sarkisian hire. I'm like, I mean, to be honest with you, you know, the only game I was ever around watching him actually coach was the Rose Bowl game in 2008. He was the offensive coordinator. And he took the Washington job, and yeah, he did okay. Then he took the USC job, and like, okay, he did okay. Then he had off-the-field problems. All right, happens. You know, he went to the Falcons for a year. You know, he was at Alabama. Then he went to the Falcons for a year. And to be honest with you, the Falcons, after Kyle Shanahan, had him as the offensive coordinator and did okay. Then he went to Alabama and all that talent, and, you know, and they did some good things. And he was able to get that into the Texas job. To be honest with you, as a head coach, he's been okay. What did they expect? I watched him in Washington. I thought he was good. Not great. Good. I watched him in USC. I thought he was good. Not great. With the Falcons, I thought he was good, not great. Are you shocked that he's good, not great at Texas? I mean, come on. The media gets so enamored with certain guys where I just sit back and say, are you guys watching the same thing? He's good, not great. Like, look at our Shikellamy broadcast booth. Chief, great. I know I'll spot great.
You do.
Chief, great. Am I supposed to add on to that?
Supposedly, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the other guy's great, too.